And we could do a whole show on that. Hey, Nani, Nani. How does a state, all states being fragments of that global centralizing energy, the totalitarian mindset, recognized by many on the left but never called out as an organized presence, those I dub Plato's tribesmen, who place an idea, be it perfection or history, far above living things? How does a state know who must be silenced, who harassed, who weeded out, who offered cash to protect its raison d'etre? How does it know what messages support it and which threaten, that it can allow Marx but not Kropotkin? Unless it has a clear notion where it's headed, i.e., a vision, which, to find success, must be kept hidden, because all depends on keeping the people pinned in. And, as we learned from Alice, secrecy is a key teaching instilled in power's offspring. We quoted one poisoned pedagogue. A sample of such an exercise is keeping silent. Ask a child, do you think you could remain silent for a few hours sometime? And don't you wish the child had said, Ken, what about you? And then stuffed a sock in his mouth. Oh, don't you, I mean, come on. That whole fantasy of being able to invest little children with the power and omniscience and knowledge of us who've been around the block a few times. We want our youth powerful. We definitely do. Unlike the power guys who simply want them to be under control, to implement that vision. All they care about is that vision. So everything depends on keeping the people penned in, free from the annoyance of the people's scrutiny. Obviously, being worshippers of Plato, they must have an original to which to make us bend for our own good, of course, quote unquote. And on the flip, what's not a threat? How does it know what thought to let live by offering encouragement, by bestowing largesse, and then letting ego do the rest? Put generally, I would say, thought that enables us to figure out their existence, Karl Popper and Martin Bernal come to mind, and thought that allows us to get big, like Alice, psychically, such that we become free of any sense of dependence on them, i.e., on the state, put generally. Returning to Eric Fromm, quote, only if the working class was led, so he thought, and he was speaking about Lenin, by a small, well-disciplined group of professional revolutionaries. I think anyone who found Marxism as a youth had to go through that. I mean, at least of my age. I think they've abandoned this, hopefully, this notion of the vanguard of the proletariat. Has that been given an ignominious burial? I sure hope so. Anyway. A well-disciplined group of professional revolutionaries. Only if it was forced by this group to execute the laws of history. I mean, we can see now clearly, this is power thought, right? This worship of history and subjecting the people, or putting the people in harness to you know, and then making the people drive this wagon to its destination. This is what Fromm is talking about by folks who don't believe in man, as he says. And that's an understatement. He's being very generous. And it does take Alice to sort of unpack that unbelief in man, disbelief in man, lack of faith in man, quote unquote. So, and this is what Fromm is saying, the crucial point in Lenin's position. Should I read all of this? That only the professional revolutionary, professional quote-unquote revolutionary, professional revolutionaries could drive the people to execute the law. Yeah, let's execute the laws of history. Put them on a firing line. The crucial point in Lenin's position was the fact that he had no faith in the spontaneous action of the workers and peasants. And he had no faith in them because he had no faith in man. Faith in mankind without faith in man, you know, the living, breathing, warm-bodied, blooded, physical thing, us, the little spark of the universe, of the universal spirit of all living things. We who come from the earth, our earth, represent for earth. He had no faith in any of that. Without faith in that, it leads to the very results which we see in the tragic history of the Inquisition, Robespierre's terror, and Lenin's dictatorship. Many democratic socialist and socialist revolutionaries saw the dangers in Lenin's concept. Nobody saw it more clearly than Rosa Luxemburg. She warned that the choice to be made was between democratism and bureaucratism, and the development in Russia proved the correctness of her position, of her prediction. While an ardent and uncompromising critic of capitalism, she was a person with an unshakable and profound faith in man. When she and Gustav Landauer were murdered by the soldiers of the German counter-revolution, the humanistic tradition of faith in man was meant to be killed with them. It was this lack of faith in man which made it possible for the authoritarian systems to conquer man, leading him on to have faith in an idol rather than in himself. Nobody has seen the danger which has come to pass under Stalinism more clearly than Proudhon in the middle of the 19th century. Proudhon's thinking is based on an ethical concept in which self-respect is the first maxim of ethics. From self-respect follows respect of one's neighbor as the second maxim of morality. This concern with the inner change in man as the basis of a new social order was expressed by Proudhon in a letter saying, quote, "The old world is in a process of dissolution. One can change it only by the integral revolution in the ideas and in the hearts." And I'm quoting Erich Fromm. The same awareness, and that was a quote from Proudhon in Erich Fromm, continuing, the same awareness of the dangers of centralization and the same belief in the productive powers of man, although mixed with a romantic glorification of destruction, is to be found in the writings of Michael Bakunin. In a letter of 1868, he says, quote, "The great teacher of us all, Proudhon, said that the unhappiest combination which might occur could be that socialism should unite itself to absolutism. The striving of the people for economic freedom and the material," and this was, again, you could see this in Marx, "and material well-being through dictatorship and the concentration of all political and social powers in the state. May the future protect us from the favors of despotism, but may it preserve us from the unhappy consequences and stultifications of indoctrinated or state socialism." This was 1868. Nothing living and human, nothing live, and this is still quoting Bakunin, nothing living and human can prosper without freedom. And a form of socialism which would do away with freedom, or which would not recognize it as the sole creative principle and basis, would lead us directly into slavery and bestiality. 50 years after Proudhon's letter to Marx, Peter Kropotkin summed up his idea of socialism in this statement. That, quote, "the fullest development of individuality will combine with the highest development of voluntary association in all its aspects, in all possible degrees, and for all possible purposes. An association that is always changing, that bears in itself the elements of its own duration, that takes on the forms which best correspond at any given moment to the manifold strivings of all," unquote. Isn't that a beautiful definition? Kropotkin, like many of his socialist predecessors, stressed the inherent tendencies for cooperation and mutual help present in man and in the animal kingdom. How did Kropotkin know? He studied the earth. He studied our animal brothers and sisters and concluded, as we have over the millennia, that they don't know more than we do. We simply have had our souls sat on by the power-mad few. Now, see, that is a definition of socialism we don't hear, which suggests to me we should abandon the word and call what Kropotkin sees our freedom. And I'm thinking we should add Eric Fromm's The Sane Society to our group of necessary books because he honored the ancestors. I can't tell you how many people I didn't find, I would not have found, if he hadn't collected them in that book, that precious preservation of precious people. Necessary books for this moment of decision, for this moment of decision, visioning, and transition.